Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. In this episode, I want to provide you with a variety of updates on what's going on with regards to Russia and the Ukraine war. Things have really started to heat up over the course of the last week or so, and we're seeing a lot of different activity. So in today's episode, I'll give you an update on what's going on with mobilization. And interestingly, President Putin has issued a correction statement. So this isn't an apology. Quite clearly, he's not going to apologize for anything. But he has issued a correction statement about the announcement he made about mobilization. So we'll have a look at that, and then we'll talk about what the implications of that are. I'll provide you with an update of the annexation of the four regions that Russia is currently occupying. The referendums have now closed, the votes are in, so I'll tell you exactly what the percentages came in at. And then we'll run through exactly what the implications of this annexation process are, both from Russia's perspective and also from Ukraine and the West's point of view. I'll give you an update on what's going on with the Nord Stream pipelines, because another leak has been identified. So there seems to have been another explosion at some point. So we'll have a look at what's going on with that. And then I'll talk you through exactly what the implications of all of this methane gas being released into the ocean and the atmosphere are, because methane represents a real problem from a global warming perspective. So we'll have a look at that in a bit more detail. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary of the implications of what's going on right now, because everything is starting to escalate. I think we're seeing things coming towards a bit of a head over the next 4 to 6 weeks. So we'll talk through the implications of that and look at what's happening with regards to Russia's economy and the global economy. So before we get started, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. I'm on that push for 200,000. So if you could help, that would be fantastic. Don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos. So if you don't have time to watch the entire thing, you can skip through and pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon and Amazon shopping links. Now, as you may well be aware, on the 21st of September, President Putin gave an address to the nation on TV stating that he intended to call up 300,000 reservists to go and join the fight in Ukraine. Now, this is the first time that Russia has called a mobilization since World War II. And this sent shockwaves all through the Russian population. Everybody became concerned that the special military operation, as it's been called, in Ukraine, had now become a war that required civilians to join the fight. And these fears accelerated when news started to spread on social media, when people who were not reservists and had no relationship at all with the military were being handed conscription papers. Protests started to break out all across Russia, and the police came in and arrested a lot of the protesters. And it was reported by human rights groups that many of these protesters were then conscripted and forced to go and fight in Ukraine. And the net result of all of this was panic and mass exodus. And over the course of the last week or so, we have seen hundreds of thousands of Russians leaving Russia. More than 100,000 people have crossed the border into Kazakhstan. Over 50,000 have gone to Georgia. And over 40,000 had made the crossing into Finland, which was the last country of the EU that was allowing Russians to cross the border. However, in view of the massive increase in demand, the Finnish authorities have now changed their position.
Finland has announced it will ban Russians with Schengen tourist visas from entering the country from Friday, after Moscow's mobilization order triggered a surge in arrivals. Helsinki's foreign minister said the move aims to completely prevent Russian tourism to the Nordic country, which shares a land border with Moscow. The government justified the decision by saying that the arrivals threaten the country's international relations. Russian citizens will still be able to enter Finland on human rights grounds and to meet family, work or study. Finland had already limited the number of visas issued to Russians amid mounting public and political pressure in the country.
So the options for Russians looking to leave the country are now starting to narrow. And there is a big question as to whether or not Russia will close the borders internally and essentially say to all of their citizens, you are no longer allowed to leave Russia. Now, in order to try to calm the population down, President Putin has made a follow-up statement regarding his initial mobilization announcement.
Russian President Vladimir Putin on Thursday for the first time acknowledged publicly that his military mobilization had not gone smoothly. In an address, Putin said mistakes had been made in a call-up to reinforce Russia's flagging military operations in Ukraine and said they should be corrected.
Many questions arise during this mobilization. Mistakes need to be corrected and they cannot be made in the future. This is about those citizens who qualify for deferment. For example, fathers who have many children or people suffering from chronic diseases, or those who can't be drafted because of their senior age. It is necessary to investigate each case like this separately. If the mistake has been made, I repeat that it should be corrected and return home those who had been drafted unreasonably.
Russia's announcement on September 21st of its first partial military mobilization since World War II prompted thousands of men to flee the country to avoid the draft and provoked widespread public expressions of discontent, including complaints about enlistment officers sending call-up papers to clearly ineligible men. Some 2,000 people have also been arrested at unsanctioned anti-war protests in over 30 towns and cities. Putin said those who had military experience and training in required specialties should be called up first. He notably refrained from assigning blame for the errors.
So as I mentioned at the start of the video, this absolutely is not an apology by President Putin. I don't think that's in his nature to come out and state that he made a mistake. But what's also interesting about this announcement is that he hasn't come out and stipulated that it's only reservists who are being called up. What he did say was that old people, ill people, and men who have many children will be exempt from the conscription. But he hasn't tried to allay everybody's fears by saying this will only be 300,000 and it will only be people who have military background. And that's really what's causing mass concern amongst the general populace. They are all worried that they will be taken out of their family lives, out of their jobs, and be forced to put on a uniform and go and fight in Ukraine. So I don't actually see this public statement as putting anybody's mind to rest at all. He's actually confirming that people will be called up. And I think the message is clear that unless you're old, ill, or you've got lots of children, then you are very much in the frame to be called up and be sent to Ukraine. Now, around the same time that President Putin was announcing that he was mobilising 300,000 additional troops, the Russian-appointed heads of the four regions of Ukraine that are currently occupied by Russia announced that they were going to hold referendums to ask all of the citizens if they wanted to officially join Russia. The Ukrainian authorities in the West denounced these referendums as illegal and having no power. However, between the 23rd and the 27th of September, voting was held in the four regions and the results are now in. The Russian authorities in Luhansk have stated that 98.4% people voted to join Russia. In Zaporizhia, the figure was 93.1%. In Kherson, 87%, and Donetsk had the highest percentage at 99.2%. At the time of filming this video, preparations were underway in Moscow for a ceremony to announce that these four regions will now officially join Russia.
Russian President Vladimir Putin on Friday will begin formally annexing parts of Ukraine. Moscow's Red Square was closed to the public ahead of the ceremony, where banners read Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, Kherson, Russia. Moscow plans to annex those four Ukrainian regions, 15% of the country's total area, or the size of Hungary or Portugal. But just how Russia would mark the annexation was unclear. The Kremlin did not say whether Putin would attend the Red Square concert, as he did a similar event in 2014 after Russia proclaimed annexed Ukraine's Crimea region. Spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Putin would, however, make a speech inside the Kremlin.
There will be a major speech by President Putin at the ceremony. It's important to note this is not a presidential address to the Federal Assembly. Let there be no confusion. That is a different format and one that will take place later.
So what's going on here, and will this official annexation of these four regions change anything? Well, from Russia's perspective, President Putin is trying to change the focus of this war. By absorbing these four regions into Russia, he's now stating that any attacks that are made within these regions are effectively an attack on Russia. So rather than this being an invasion of Ukraine and therefore an overseas war for Russia, he's officially moving the border of Russia to incorporate these four regions of Ukraine. And he's now saying that any warfare that goes on within those areas is an attack on Russia, and he's made it clear before that he will use any means necessary to defend any attacks on Russia. So the undercurrent of all of his statements is that he's prepared to use nuclear weapons if anybody attacks Russia. And now that he's deeming these four regions of Ukraine to be part of Russia, in theory, if you follow his logic through, he's claiming that he could now use nuclear weapons against Ukraine because Ukraine's effectively invading Russia. Now, this logic is obviously flawed because you can't invade a territory, call it your own, and then claim that somebody is declaring war on you when you started it. But that's exactly what President Putin's position is. And the concern here is that if Russia keeps losing ground and losing this war, that they'll need to do something more severe to try to bring an end to this conflict. Now, from Ukraine's perspective, they are saying that these referendums are entirely illegal and therefore hold no water whatsoever. And the authorities have pointed out to the Russians that over 80% of all of the residents of those four areas have actually fled from the military conflict. So even if you were to accept that these referendums were legal, not enough of the residents of those areas have actually voted in order for this to be a representative ballot.
United Nations Chief Secretary General Antonio Guterres delivered his own rebuke on Thursday.
Any decision to proceed with the annexation of Donetsk, Luhansk, Kherson and Zaporizhia, regions of Ukraine, would have no legal value and deserves to be condemned. It is a dangerous escalation. It has no place in the modern world. It must not be accepted.
And in direct response to these referendums, additional sanctions and military support have now been announced.
U.S. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said Washington would send more financial aid to assist Ukraine.
And today, the United States is announcing an additional $1.1 billion package of weapons and equipment for Ukraine through the Ukraine Security Assistant Initiative.
The announcement brings the total U.S. security aid to $16.2 billion. Washington and the EU also said they would impose more economic costs on Moscow.
And we're determined to make the Kremlin pay for this further escalation.
Ursula von der Leyen is the EU Commission President.
So we propose sweeping new import bans on Russian products. This will keep Russian products out of the European market and deprive Russia of an additional 7 billion euros in revenues. We're also proposing to extend the list of products that cannot be exported to Russia anymore. The aim is here to deprive the Kremlin's military complex of key technologies.
So things are now starting to heat up on both sides. Russia has now officially annexed these four regions in exactly the same way as it did with Crimea in 2014. Now, it managed to get away with the situation in Crimea, and the new sanctions and the military support show that the West has not agreed to this annexation. And in terms of the war itself, it's been reported that Ukrainian forces are making further advances in the Luhansk region and that they're trying to win back that whole territory. So Ukraine is not taking this lying down. Russia may well have declared that this is now part of Russia, but Ukrainian forces are making concerted efforts to retake that land. And it'll be really interesting to hear what Russia's official response to this is going forward. On Tuesday the 27th of September, it was reported that three leaks had been found on the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 pipelines, and these leaks were resulting in a large release of methane gas from both pipelines. This remains an ongoing problem, and the situation has now got worse.
The Swedish Coast Guard on Thursday said it discovered a fourth unexplained gas leak in the undersea Nord Stream pipelines linking Russia to Europe. And as gas rose to the surface, allegations of sabotage flew between Brussels, Moscow, and Washington. The European Union is investigating the cause of the leaks in the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines under the Baltic Sea and has said it suspects sabotage, to which it promised a, quote, robust and united response, but it has not said who is to blame. From Brussels, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg warned, quote, any deliberate attack against allies' critical infrastructure would be met with a united and determined response. And an EU official drew a direct link between the Nord Stream leaks and the Russian invasion of Ukraine, saying about the possible sabotage of pipelines, quote, this fundamentally changes the nature of the conflict as we have seen it so far. It's unclear why any nation, either supplying energy or consuming it, might seek to sabotage key energy infrastructure. Russia and European partners spent billions building the pipelines, which are operated by Russian energy firm Gazprom. Moscow, conducting its own investigation, has said it suspects what it called state-sponsored terrorism, and a Russian foreign ministry spokesperson on Thursday said Washington had the most to gain from the damaged pipelines. The Kremlin has also said allegations of Russian responsibility were, quote, stupid. Moscow had halted deliveries via Nord Stream 1, saying Western sanctions had hampered operations. Nord Stream 2 had not started commercial operations, although neither was in use at the time of the leaks. Both still contained large volumes of gas.
So Russia is now implying that the USA organized some form of terrorist attack on both of these pipelines. And the USA have come out and stated that they believe that it's likely that Russia had some involvement. So both sides are blaming each other. Now, the investigation is still ongoing, so we don't actually have an answer in terms of who instigated these explosions. But let's quickly talk through the logic. These pipelines had been closed since the end of August. Russia had actually been reducing the amount of gas that was being fed to Germany through the Nord Stream pipeline. As a result, firstly, of planned maintenance, then there was an issue with regards to a turbine that was held up in Canada, and then there was reportedly an oil leak, which meant that they had to shut the pipeline down, and no gas was supplied to Germany during September. And Germany has made its intentions very clear that it wants to stop buying gas from Russia. So in the medium to long term, this pipeline is redundant. So with that in mind, we need to ask the question as to why the West would go to the bother of trying to organise some sort of military effort that wouldn't be detectable to blow up these pipelines. Because going forward, Russia won't be earning any revenue from them anyway. So it's not as if they'll be cutting off a large amount of cash to the Russian authorities. In fact, the Russian authorities are the ones who've stopped sending gas anyway. So they'd already cut off their own revenue source by not providing the gas that Germany wanted to buy. So from the West's point of view, there's no real upside, there's no major advantage to blowing up these pipelines, because it's not really hurting Russia any more than Russia's already hurting right now. But if you look at the situation from Russia's perspective, Germany actually wants the gas to be provided right now. It's still filling up its storage capacity and it still needs those gas supplies. So there's no sanction in place currently that stops Germany buying gas directly from Russia. So if the pipeline was open and operational, Russia could send gas. Germany would take it, they would still be paying Russia large amounts of cash. Now, Russia have come up with a variety of excuses over the last few months as to why they can't provide the maximum amount of gas. And this pipeline can provide around 60 billion cubic meters of gas per year, so it's a lot of gas. And as you're probably aware, President Putin has threatened on many occasions to switch off the supplies to the major countries in Europe. And he's already switched it off to Poland, Bulgaria, Denmark, the Netherlands and Finland. Now, the reason that those countries had their supplies switched off is that they refused to pay Russia in rubles. Over the last few months, Germany has needed those gas supplies. It uses gas to produce electricity and it also feeds gas directly to consumers for heating and cooking. So Germany couldn't afford to have all of its supplies switched off in April. And as a result of that, it's been paying Russia in rubles as President Putin demanded. So Germany's been doing everything it's been asked to do. And Russia has really been running out of excuses as to why they haven't been providing the amount of gas that they need to. And these explosions provide the perfect opportunity for Russia to state that we can no longer supply gas to Germany because the infrastructure is damaged. So when you take a step back and look at the overall perspective, the West doesn't really have anything to gain by damaging this infrastructure. However, from Russia's point of view, it provides a very convenient way of cutting off the gas supplies to Germany without raising the political tensions and potentially exposing itself to even more sanctions. And as I discussed in a separate video, it's quite difficult these days to get away with this sort of terrorism without somebody finding out what you've been doing. So we've got satellite imagery all around the globe that would pick up any planes or ships or possibly even any submarine action. So it will be identifiable who did this if it was an external attack. But the easiest way to be able to orchestrate these sort of explosions would be to send something down the pipeline internally and then have that detonate at an appropriate point. And as I mentioned in a previous video, all pipeline operators use what are called PIGs. And these are robotic instruments that move backwards and forwards within pipes, usually for maintenance or repair purposes. And it would be relatively straightforward to be able to put some dynamite or TNT or something of that nature onto these robots, move them down the pipeline, and then detonate them remotely. I've been asked by a variety of people to talk about the implications of the release of a huge amount of natural gas from both of these pipelines into the ocean and the atmosphere. Natural gas is predominantly methane, so let's have a quick look at a video which gives us a bit more information on methane itself.
Methane leaks are speeding up global warming. They've become a top threat to the global climate in recent years, with the leaks at two Russian gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea as the latest example. Research has shown that reducing methane emissions is vital to averting the worst impacts of climate change. And after decades of focusing on gas carbon dioxide, policymakers are starting to recognize its threat.
So there's urgent need to do something, and there is a lot we can do.
But what is methane? It's the main component of natural gas. Some methane comes from natural sources like swamps, but most comes from human activity. Two-thirds of those human-caused emissions come from livestock farming and fossil fuels. Much of the rest are from decomposing waste and rice cultivation. Scientists say methane is much more potent than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas in the short term. Methane breaks down in the atmosphere in a fraction of the time compared to CO2, but it has a front-loaded impact. When you compare the effects of both over a century, research shows methane is 28 times worse. But over two decades, that figure jumps to 80.
Thank you.
In 2021, over 100 nations signed a pledge to slash emissions from 2020 levels.
Together, we're committing to collectively reduce our methane by 30% by 2030, and I think we could probably go beyond that.
World governments, including the United States, are introducing requirements that the oil and gas industry detect and repair leaks, after studies showed leaks in the industry were a huge problem. And the world is close to crossing a so-called tipping point, where climate feedback loops kick in to make global warming self-perpetuating. One study says that events that could touch off those loops are imminent, like the collapse of the Greenland ice sheet or the melting of the Arctic permafrost.
So we started this video talking about mobilization and people being called up to fight in Ukraine and the implications of that. And now we've got on to methane releases, global warming, and the melting of the polar ice caps. And I think this is a really good example as to how things are interrelated. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has had so many different impacts on the world, both financially and environmentally. And the release of this huge amount of gas from the Nord Stream pipelines is really quite damaging. So the images that I've shown you earlier of the bubbles coming up to the surface in the Baltic Sea, the diameter of those bubble areas is around 1 kilometer. So that's about 3/4 of a mile wide. So this is absolutely enormous. And the two Nord Stream pipelines are around 1,300 kilometers long. So that's around 850 miles. And they are full of gas. So Russia has switched off the supplies for various reasons. But because of the nature of gas pipelines, you need to have a certain amount of gas in the pipeline at any one time. So as these pipelines were ruptured, all of that gas which is held under pressure is now starting to release. And it's estimated that it'll take around a week for all of this gas to be released. So this is a huge amount of methane that's being released both into the sea and then subsequently into the atmosphere. Now, the Danish authorities have announced a 5-mile exclusion zone around the bubbling areas. And that's really to protect all the shipping because this methane is flammable. If it was to come into contact with the spark, it potentially could ignite and cause huge fireballs. But as we saw in the video, methane is bad from an environmental point of view because it increases global warming. Now, one thing that's really interesting here is that Europe moved away from coal towards gas-fired power stations around 30 or 40 years ago because methane and natural gas was seen to be less environmentally damaging than coal. It releases around 50% of the CO2 that coal releases. So that was really why everybody moved towards it as a fuel source. But interestingly, the analysis that's been done shows that overall, when you're mining gas, because there are leaks such as the one that we're seeing now from the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, the 50% reduction is actually offset by all of those other leaks all around the world. So on a net basis, it's considered that natural gas potentially has the same damaging effect as coal does. It's slightly different because coal holds all of the CO2 until it's burned, whereas when you're dealing with gas, obviously as soon as there's a leak, it hits the atmosphere immediately. So the four leaks that have appeared in the Nord Stream pipelines are not only causing issues from a political point of view and from a revenue point of view for Russia, but they're also causing widespread environmental issues as well. Now, while we're on the topic of undersea terrorism and people blowing up pipelines, I wanted to discuss the potential for undersea terrorism to affect your internet connection. This map shows the global infrastructure of submarine cables, which are the backbone of the global communication infrastructure and account for around 95% of all transatlantic data traffic. Almost all the world's internet traffic is carried across a global network of over 500 fiber optic pipes that collectively span 1.3 million kilometres. This network is predominantly owned by companies like Google and Microsoft, as well as France's Alcatel submarine networks and increasingly China's Huawei marine networks. There are dozens of these cables which connect the EU directly with the United States, and similar networks exist linking Latin America, Asia, Africa and Europe. Now, the majority of these cables are laid in inaccessible deep water locations, but they can be accessed obviously by submarines or military vessels. And the fact that we've seen explosions on the Nord Stream pipelines throws up the question as to whether or not there's the potential for these cables to be targeted, because that would then potentially cut communication and internet connectivity between Europe and the USA. Now, British and American military officials have repeatedly warned Russia has the technical skills to take out part of the world's undersea internet infrastructure to cripple some of the West's digital networks. These pipelines are often located less than 100 metres underwater and would require either a submarine or unmanned vehicle to plant explosives at critical points of the network. So I'm not saying that Russia is going to do this and that they're planning to make any of these attacks, but I just wanted to raise the issue to make sure that we're all aware that the internet and communication and connectivity that we all take for granted is actually dependent on various cables. And if somebody decided to attack those cables, then that would potentially mean that we could all lose everything overnight. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because we're now seeing a real step change in the war. It's starting to become more aggressive on both sides. And we've seen the mobilization being called, and President Putin's corrected his statement, but he hasn't apologized and he hasn't changed the perspective in terms of it still looks likely that anybody could be conscripted in Russia. And that's causing pandemonium in Russia. A lot of people are making a break for the border. They're trying to get out of the country before they get conscripted and forced to go to Ukraine. So we've seen a real change from Russia's perspective in terms of their intention towards this war. It's really clear now that President Putin is committed to this war. He's going to throw as many people as he needs to keep it going. So he's not likely to back off anytime soon. And from the West's perspective, they've increased the sanctions against Russia. So we're seeing the West upping the ante at the same time. And in the actual fighting areas, Ukraine is trying to win back all of those zones that Russia has decided to annex. And the annexation of these four regions is an important point in this conflict, because Russia is now claiming that they've moved the border, that all of these four areas now are officially part of the motherland. They are now part of Russia. And they say that any attacks on those areas now is deemed to be an attack on Russia, and they'll do whatever it takes to defend their land. So the implied message here is that Russia is threatening everybody with nuclear weapons, that they are prepared for nuclear strikes in the event that Ukraine doesn't back off. So unlike what happened in Crimea in 2014, Ukraine and the West are not agreeing to these tactics. Nobody is accepting that these four areas have become part of Russia, apart from President Putin himself. But it's quite likely that the number of forces and the intensity of fighting will increase over the course of the next few months. And these really are the critical months of this war, because we're going into the winter period, which is going to be more challenging from Russia's perspective to keep those supply lines fed. And if Russia can make it through to the spring, then my personal view is that this war is likely to go on for at least the next 12 months, because Russia doesn't want to be seen to lose face. It's losing ground, but it won't accept any form of peace agreement. The fact that they've annexed these areas means that from President Putin's perspective, this is now part of Russia. So it's very, very unlikely that while he's in charge, that there's going to be any change in that perspective. Now, there's been some commentary and speculation in the press recently that the only way to bring this war to an end would be to remove President Putin from power. Whilst he remains in charge of Russia, it's very unlikely that we will see any sort of peace settlement. And in terms of what the implications of all of this are for the global economy, well, of course, it's really bad news. As I've mentioned in other videos, the longer this war goes on, the more damage is being inflicted on the economy, because we're still seeing volatility in terms of oil prices and food prices. We've got really high rates of inflation all around the world. We're now seeing interest rates starting to be raised aggressively by a variety of different countries. When you have high inflation and high interest rates, that causes a horrible combination of an increase in the cost of living at a time when people have got less disposable income. So it's likely that over the next 3 to 6 to 12 months, we'll still see high inflation, but we'll see people having less money to spend. So that means we'll start to see economies slowing down, and we could get to the dreaded stagflation, where we've got stagnation in the economy at the same time as high inflation. But overall, the biggest risk here is that we're going to go into recession. A number of countries are teetering on the brink right now. The UK is probably the most fragile of all the big economies in the world. It's had real problems over the course of the last few weeks. We've seen the value of the currency deteriorate rapidly. We've seen a variety of policies announced by the government that have not gone down well. And we've seen the cost of borrowing for the UK government rise to above 4%. That compares to the official rate of interest of 2.25%. So that really doesn't equate, because the cost of borrowing for the country should be lower than the official cost of borrowing for all of the citizens and the companies. So at some point, we're going to see a really big increase in interest rates in the UK. That will have a negative impact on the economy, which could easily push the UK into recession. And as I've said many times before on the channel, if one country in the world goes into recession, it has a knock-on impact, because the UK is a net importer. It's buying lots of things from lots of other countries. If it has a reduction in GDP, that means it will buy less. Therefore, all of the countries are exporting to the UK will sell less. Their economies will start to contract. And so it goes on. As those economies contract, they will have a knock-on impact to the people they're buying from. And therefore, you can see how this thing becomes a domino effect all across the world. So the bottom line here is that if this war carries on for a prolonged period, right the way through into 2023, then it will definitely have a major negative impact on the global economy, and most likely will trigger a global recession in 2023. So hopefully you found today's episode useful, informative, educational, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up, and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.